Come on, people.
My name is Paul Flaming. I'm coming for a petition for the Broadcasting Company.
Yeah.
We met a few times before.
Yeah.
You remember me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And in the 90s, we made an interview over the phone, and then you had just released the album Till Fuck Die, and you said that you had this cover, the slogan for the moment that was Till Fuck Die.
Right.
So I'm still waiting for what's the slogan for the this game now?
That's a good question. You know, it's like I've spent the last 10 years really putting together what was the Neon God, and that was a statement that, in a lot of ways, was really tied to KFD, because KFD was a real intensive assault on organized religion. And I had reached a point, because I grew up in the church, you know, I mean, my grandfather was a deacon, my uncle was a preacher, my father was a Sunday school superintendent, so every time the doors was open, I was there. And I spent 20 years of my life going around blaming God for everything that I didn't like about what was going on in my life and the world and things like that. And I realized that I wasn't mad at God, I was mad at man. You know, when I came to that epiphany, you know, that conclusion, everything started to change. And so KFD was really a real intensive look at what organized religions, whether it's the Catholic Church, which I view as a giant cult, probably the biggest in the world. And I don't mean it as an attack against Catholics. I'm talking about the institution of that church. So for me, you know, there's a big difference, and I hope that people can see the difference. And the whole idea was to get people to think for themselves. Neon God was really just an extension of that cult mentality. So I've spent about the last 10 years of my life examining that. So, and I think I've said everything I wanted to say with that right now. And to be honest with you, the new record that's coming out in September is nothing like what those were. So it'll go back. It's not by design, but it's more similar, more akin to the first two records.
Okay, America has, this year, it's going to be 230 years of the United States of America, the declaration of the independence.
So America what?
Independence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
230 years. So America has grown old. Has it grown up?
Well, when you say 230 years of independence, see, I don't look at it like that, because I'm part Native American. And it was there a long time before all the white folks came over there. You know, so, and it's funny, because when I come to Europe, I hear about U.S. imperialism and, you know, and things like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not waving the American flag here, because I got a different flag to wave. Because when people start talking about America, and I start thinking, wow, let's see, who was it that came over and killed all my ancestors? It was white Europeans, wasn't it? You know, so I don't, you know, I understand what you're saying about 230 years, but I don't really look at independence in America exactly like that. I feel many times like I've been born of two fathers, and it's very confusing for me a lot of times as to where to identify.
What colors are the radio flags that you mentioned? Can you think of any?
Well, it kind of reminds me one time that somebody was talking about an old Indian parable, whether it was country or age. And somebody said to the chief one time, says, "Chief, when was I born?" And the chief looked around for a second. He says, "I think it was springtime." So if you understand what that means, they're not putting a date, they're not putting a stamp on any of that. It just, it is what it is for the moment. So I don't think colors would apply.
Okay, thank you.
More questions? Raise your hand.
Hello, my name is Vicent. I'm coming from Barcelona, Catalonia. And my question is, you've been working with indie labels for a while. How do you see this way of working compared to what you did in the 80s with the major?
Well, majors don't know how to sell records anymore. I mean, they had run their course back, you know, in the early 90s. So, being a part of the Sanctuary group, you know, we had wanted to leave EMI for a long time, but we weren't the only ones, because when you're dealing in the genre of music that we're in, and you're working with a gigantic label that has no touch with the streets anymore. I mean, when you look around this room here, the people that buy their records here, the majority of the time, they're buying from what we call a mom and pop record store. In other words, small. Exactly. That's exactly what it is, you know. And you can't get this, you know, at the major chains anymore. There's, if you're not the flavor of the month, especially, you know, with big chains. We went to a thing with, even with what we did with the Neon God, we had to release it in two parts, because major chains don't want to carry double record sets anymore. They'll carry what they call historical double record sets, like the Beatles' White Album or The Wall or something like that, but they don't want to take new product, because they have their rack space designated, and they have it figured out to the centimeter as to how much floor space it takes. And when you're dealing with that kind of mentality, and the major labels are going along with that kind of thinking, I don't give a shit about how many centimeters are on your floor, you know, and if you've got it figured to that nth degree like that, that's not someplace this kind of music belongs in.
Someone else? Okay, come forward.
Hi Blackie, I'm Daniele from Italy.
Hi.
As for the, you talked about indie labels and major labels. Do you think that the digital technology selling music through the internet will help the indie labels, or will kill the...
Boy, I don't know. I think it's too soon to determine that. I think we're probably approaching a time where music is going to be free. I don't think there's any way to control that anymore. I think the whole genre of everything that you guys are doing is changing dramatically. And I think it's got everybody on edge a little bit. And it may have reached a point where it has come full circle, where music was intended to be played live, and then somehow some technology got developed, you know, 70 or 80 years ago, and some businessman in one of these big music chain stores somewhere figured out a way, well, you know, we can rip off the band, and we can rip off the consumer at the same time, and we'll make a shitload of money, right? So I think it's a thing where maybe it's come full circle, because major labels, in their arrogance, did not put the cork in the bottle, and the genie got out of the bottle, and now they can't control it, and they don't know how to control it. And I think, you know, its days are numbered of selling it the way it was. So I'm not sure if it even matters anymore, whether it's an independent label or a major label. I think the majors are really, really scared. It'll probably be a point where they will sell music based on the amount of advertising they can get, similar to a website. You know, that seems to be where they think they're going. And movies may even end up being the same way.
The governments all around the world are helping the labels with laws that are very restrictive for the people. So
are you familiar with the term lobbying?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's why they're helping. You know, I mean, the old proverbial one hand washing the other, you know. But that's all, you know, the richest 2% of any country are going to control the wealth. You know, and it's less than that. So if you have lobbying going on, it doesn't matter whether it's Washington, D.C. or Milan or wherever it may be, that's going to go on everywhere.
Thank you.
Hi, Blackie.
Hi.
I'm Tom from Swedish Radio. I was just wondering, since you've written songs like Animal and Sex Drive, but you've also written like political songs with like very serious lyrics. Mm. Do you think that by writing all these songs about, you know, like sex and stuff, do you think that has created a problem for you to be taken seriously?
When we did The Crimson Idol, we discovered that we had created a whole new audience for ourselves. We have what I call the Fuck Like a Beast people and the Crimson Idol people. And a lot of times they don't necessarily cross over. You know, they don't mix sometimes. But, you know, I discovered a long time ago that the best way to create music is to try to do what you feel at the moment. Don't write about what you think is going to be topical or what is popular, what's big in the charts or anything. You can't do that. You have to write, you have to make records that reflect who you are at the moment. You know, and if you don't do that, you're not making honest music. You know, and to be honest with you, we had reached a point in the mid-80s where we had done a record and a tour and a record and a tour and a record and a tour, and I was crazy and I didn't know who I was anymore. So, back to the major label mentality, we got ready to do The Headless Children, and they heard the original demos that we did for it, and they said, well, we don't think this is the kind of record that you should be doing. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, it doesn't sound like Wasp. It doesn't sound like what's going on in the marketplace right now. We don't think that this is the record for you to make. And fortunately for us, in our contract, we had last right of approval, which meant that we could do basically whatever we wanted. But what they were saying in a nice way was, well, you do whatever you want to do, but if this fails, you're going to go down the tubes with it. So they send you off with a real good frame of mind when you go to make a record, right? So a year or so goes by and it ends up being the biggest record we ever had. And they're all taking credit for the guidance that they were giving us. So you can't, it's kind of like the Rudyard Kipling poem, if a man can keep his head while all of those around him are doubting, that sort of mentality. If you believe in what you're doing, it's better to try and fail by your own hand than fail by something somebody else is telling you to do. You've got to believe in what you're doing. I reached a point where, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, that's wonderful. You know, but I started looking around and I thought, you know, maybe I've been put here to say more than it is that I've been saying. And I'll tell you where that really came from. We had done Inside the Electric Circus. And again, we had done a record and a tour and a record and a tour and a record and a tour. I couldn't feel anything. I was numb. You know, I couldn't think anymore. And we were in the UK. And I picked up a copy of Sounds magazine, and they do their reviews for the single for the week, and then there was us and ZZ Top and U2, and we got the top single of the week. But the guy wrote something in there, and he says, you know, he says, I'm giving this the number one top pick for the week, but he says, this band is capable of so much more than this. And you know, when you read something about yourself, but you're already thinking that, it has a lot of impact on you. And at that moment, I said, that's it. I'm not going to try to play this game anymore. Because where we started in 1982 and 83, that's very much who we were. But I had evolved as a person. I'd been to, you know, some of these third world countries. I saw things that, you know, when you see it on TV, maybe doesn't mean that much to you. But when you see people doing without, and you see especially the political process, you know, and the whole idea of what we were talking about, lobbying and organized religious, I mean, that stuff really, really bothered me over a period of time, because I thought art is designed, if it's true art, it's designed to provoke thought. And if it's not provoking thought, then you're just somebody who makes records. You know, and that's okay, you know, because there's a market for that too. But I realized that that's not really what I'm here for. So Headless was the first in that long line of what really became politically motivated records that we were making, because I thought if it's not making people think, if it's not designed to provoke thought, if it's not some sort of abstract art, then it's not art at all. You're just making records, and I didn't want to do that anymore. So, you know, I've been doing that pretty much ever since. So I think there's a place, especially when you've reached the point where you said a number of things, I think you can go back and forth a little bit. But at the end of the day, the truth is the only thing that really matters. And if you're not making truthful records, then you're making lies. And I think anybody who's been doing it, whether it's me or any band that's been around a long time, I don't think they feel probably like they have to do anything they don't believe in anymore. I think they've already proven themselves.
More questions?
Hello, Blackie. Lauren from France, Metalian magazine. When you play in clubs in Europe, you know that in front of the doors you have many fans that wait for you, and sometimes you don't like to meet them and to sign autographs. Is it difficult for you to be famous? Do you live well your celebrity?
For me, fame is a bunch of bullshit. I think everybody... Well, I'm going to tell you something. We're talking about being truthful. I'm going to be very truthful with you right now. All humans are insecure. All humans. Performers are massively insecure. And any one of them that says they're not is a fucking liar. And I thought, like everybody else that got into this business, you get into the business to play music. Because it's really what you want to do. That's what gets you going in the first place. But then you get into your teens, and you see it as a vehicle for something else. And that's where the purity starts to drift away. Because you start thinking, well, you know, that high school cheerleader that wouldn't fuck me when I wanted to fuck her, now if I get famous, maybe I can get her. Or maybe, you know, because I couldn't make my high school basketball team. All that stuff infiltrates your head. And for me, I discovered that the more notoriety that I got, the less attractive it was to me. And I'll be very frank with you. When I'm in a crowd of people, I don't do well at all. Like, when I'm with you right now, it's very different. I'm sitting on this side of the table. I'm very comfortable with that. But when I have people converge around me, a lot of them, I'm very uncomfortable with that. You call that paranoia if you like, you know, but it's just, I'm being real honest. If two or three people come up to me and they want me to sign something, I have no problem with that. But when there's lots of them and lots of, I know some guys that live for that. They can't live without it. I don't want it. It's not why I make records. You know, so it's part of my personality. I don't do it to be rude to people. But it's very difficult for me to deal with a lot of people one time. Probably the biggest reason is because when they start talking, they're all talking at one time, and I don't feel like I can address each one of them individually because there's no time. So I feel like I'm being rude to all of them. So for me, it's better to pull myself away and be rude to none of them. I watched other guys, famous people, have a crowd of people around them, and they're signing away and signing away. They're not listening to a fucking thing those people are saying. They're only interested in gratifying their own ego. And that's not why I do this. So I know that there are people at times that have become unhappy with me not doing that, but I would rather be truthful with them than to tell them some sort of a lie. And I cannot be more honest with you than I'm being with you right now.
Okay, two more questions before we... Okay, the lady in red, can you come forward?
Hi there. Welcome to Sweden. My name is Lina.
Hi.
I was wondering, Randy Pfeiffer recently released a new album with Animal. Barbecue Breed. Some people think that sounds more like Wasp than Wasp. What do you think about that? And have you listened to it? And what is your opinion?
I've never heard it.
You've never heard it? Okay.
So I'm sorry. I there's nothing I could really say because without hearing it, I wouldn't have an opinion. I wish him well.
Okay, Barbara. One more.
Hi Blackie, I'm Barbara from Rock Art Italy. Did you ever think of make any script out of your concept album and maybe direct any movie?
Yeah, we shot probably about 6 or 7 hours of a concept piece back in 1992, and we've never done anything with it. And it's funny you should say that, because I, with the jet lag that I have now, I've been laying in bed for about the last 7 hours thinking about that footage, because next year is the 15-year anniversary of it. And I'm not sure what to do with it. We've got a ton of footage that I would love to use, and I'm not sure how to approach. We want, there's three songs that were never included on it that I wanted to, but EMI, the big giant mentality pressuring me to give them that record, I gave them to it. In my opinion, it was unfinished, so I would like to re-release it with those three songs that were never finished. And I would like to put some sort of an edited version of this film together, because it's quite a moving piece. We did a 17-minute version of it. And everyone who ever saw it, I mean, we never released it to the public, but everyone who ever saw it, it had the same effect on all of them. I mean, everybody was just very quiet after they saw it, because it's not designed to be, you know, a glitzy show business piece. I mean, it's back to what we were talking about before, about what's the truth of what this music industry is all about, and everybody treats it differently, you know. So it's, I, when the whole idea of that record came about, somebody said to me, well, where'd you get the idea from? And I said, well, you know, I had kids coming up to me and saying, you know, hey, how do I get in the music business? How do I get from where I'm at to where you're at? And I said, well, you know, show business is not looking for people that want to do this. Show business is looking for people that must do this. And there is a huge, huge difference between want and must, because everybody wants, but few people are willing to pay the price that goes along with must. So I thought, all right, the only thing they ever see is the glitz of this business. I'm going to show them a side of this business that's as nasty and ugly as it can possibly be. And then if they still want to do it, you have my blessings. Go for it, but at least you've been warned.
Okay, that was the final question. Thanks a lot, Blackie.
Thank you, guys.